that time of the month. It's that time of the year, finally. It's that time of the decade. Team USA is back on the World Cup stage. And whether or not you watched the match against Wales live, it took place at 11 o'clock Pacific time, as in Monday morning, 11 a.m. or 2 o'clock Eastern time. That's when it was airing live, but then it was also replayed on Fox Sports or FS2 potentially during Monday Night Football. So you had multiple football options on Monday evening. Obviously, there are replays available online or with the family of Fox Sports. And if you have the app, I know you can watch it there as well. This was the opening match against Wales, and we've got England, the best in the group, looming on Friday. It's a mixed reaction. I have mixed emotions about it, but I want to get analysis for you from a goalie who played on this international stage. We had the chance to connect with Jesse Bradley a couple of months ago, and he was such a big hit, and you all enjoyed the conversation so much that we asked him to be our World Cup analyst. So we're just minutes away from him joining us here from Seattle, the hotbed for soccer, especially MLS. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. So find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Love to get your reaction to the USA versus Wales. Did you watch? How did you watch? It's going to be something you hear about and see a lot of over the course of this week. And then if Team USA makes it out of group stage and into the knockout stage, well, then it becomes all the rage. We're talking NFL to be sure. We've got our question up on both of our social media sites. But for now, the other football. We're pleased to welcome former pro goalkeeper Jesse Bradley from Seattle. And Jesse, I know I had mixed emotions. I had the highest of highs and then the lowest of lows watching the ebbs and flows of this game between the U.S. and Wales. What are your initial impressions, your initial emotions about the U.S. being back on the World Cup stage for the first time in 8 years?
It is so good to be playing World Cup soccer again for this country. And I know it means some early wake-up calls. I was up before 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time today, but it was worth it. And then to see the first half where they played amazing. And for the U.S., we have the youngest team in the tournament. So imagine, again, soccer always teaches you about life. And imagine stepping onto a stage that you've never been on before. And that's the thing about sports is you get to see people play physically and the teamwork, but you also get to see the sports psychology and how do you handle the next level. And it was fascinating. It was a good performance, but at the same time, not all ties are created equal. And we left some points out there today. We could have had a victory, but so good to be playing again. Okay, if you're not a soccer fan, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world. There's an estimated 5 billion people that are going to be watching. Whoa. And over the next month, there'll be an incredible opportunity to watch the sport. And if it's new to you, it might not have as much scoring and it might not have the physicality of American football. But what you see in terms of movement off the ball, what you see in terms of skill, what you see out there, there's a reason why it's the number one sport in the world. And I hope that, you know, segments like this maybe help you learn a little more, appreciate a little more about the game and also the people who are representing our country, because that's what they're doing on a world stage. And it's an incredible opportunity for our country. There's also, you know, it brings a sense of hope and unity. And that's what sports does at its best. Like the nations come together. And in this tournament, there's a bond that happens. And it's just a lot of fun. So I enjoyed it. And then watched some other games with our neighbors. I'd never been in my neighbor's house before, and I got invited. So it's like we're building friendships in our neighborhood around the game, too.
That's amazing. How excited are people?
Soccer in Seattle's huge. And looking out there on the field today, we had two guys from Seattle. That's 2 out of 11 that were on the field. And so it's not hard for people here to be engaged. The Sounders have, you know, about 40,000 a game. Youth soccer is incredible in Seattle. But around the country, soccer is growing. And you see it through MLS and the development, more teams, more fans. You see more kids playing youth soccer. You see the quality of coaching going up. You see kids playing even beyond what they do as a practice. They're playing in the backyard. And so soccer is growing in our country. And that's a wonderful thing. The women have been outstanding. And the women have been, you know, ranked first in the world. But the men are ranked about 15th. And so there's still a ways to go. Our best finish in the World Cup, well, actually, the very first World Cup, we finished third place out of 13 teams. But then back in 2002, we finished in the final eight. And that's our best finish. So we've been waiting for a long time. I mean, when it comes to sports, the U.S. doesn't like to be ranked 15th, right? We want to climb higher.
No.
And this is a team that's got a lot of potential right now.
Let's talk about this initial game against Wales, one in which the United States led for the vast majority, but it really was a tale of two halves. What stands out to you about the draw?
When I think about this team, we've never had more players playing at the top level overseas. MLS is ranked, I think, like eighth in terms of the worldwide leagues in soccer. And overseas now, we have people competing at the top level in a young team. And they came out and they put their best foot forward. It was a phenomenal performance. We got one goal. We could have been ahead by more. But this is key in all sports. There's an element where it's like chess and strategy. And at halftime, Wales, they made a shift. And they got much more physical, direct. They made a key substitution. And they put us under a lot of pressure. And what was interesting then is our coach didn't make a lot of changes because the first half was so great. But Berhalter in the second half waited to make changes. In soccer, possession's huge. And that's a stat you want to pay attention to when you watch the World Cup. Who has the most possession? And we started to lose possession in the second half. Now, the midfielders, it's their role to really control a game. And they have a lot of passing, dribbling. They have incredible skills. And that's where you gain a lot of possession. So as you see it play out, we just didn't regain the possession. And as a result, we ended up giving up a goal. And it was a penalty. Walker Zimmerman, the player, is a phenomenal player. And he had a really good game. And I was a former professional goalkeeper. And in soccer, there's not a lot of scoring. So when you make a mistake near your own goal, and he basically took a guy down in the box, which means a penalty kick, which means that's going to probably be a goal. And it was. All mistakes are not equal on the soccer field. And when you make a mistake by your own goal, that's part of the psychological pressure that the defenders and the goalkeeper go through. And they were given a penalty kick. They tied the game. If you said before the game, we tie with Wales, you'd probably say, okay, we can work with that. Because again, the format for the World Cup, eight groups of four, you just have to finish one of the top two teams in your group of four. Wales is a team that's very similar to us in terms of ranking. Next, we play England, who's a high-ranking team, and we're the underdog. And then we end up with Iran, the third game, and hopefully we'll win that one. But typically, 4 points might get you through, and we got 1 point today for a tie. You get three for a win. 5 points is really what you need to get through. So we got our work cut out for us.
Yes.
This was the game that we could have taken all 3 points. Tyler Adams is who they picked as the captain. He's young. He's like 23. And already you could see him after the game saying, okay, we got a tie. We got a point. Now we move forward to the next game because there's no time to dwell on past mistakes. And I just think that's a lesson for all of us. Like, you can't replay the old tapes. You can't do the woulda, coulda, shouldas. Like, you've got to keep moving forward and you got to make that shift, that professional mindset. And we got to start thinking about England. So, you know, it's one of those ties that was tough to swallow. And afterwards, Wales was thrilled. We were a little disappointed because we knew we could have done better.
In the wake of Team USA returning to the World Cup stage for the first time in 8 years, we're so excited to welcome back former pro soccer goalkeeper Jesse Bradley joining us from Seattle. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I got to ask you about the penalty kick and the strategy when you are a keeper. So Matt Turner actually got a hand on that kick from Gareth Bale, but so much power. There was so much power. How much of it is guesswork? How much of it is prep? How much of it is instinct, Jesse?
Right on. Matt Turner is a phenomenal goalie. He made a great save today. And that penalty kick save, he got his finger on it. I always like penalty kicks because as a goalkeeper, everyone expects the shooter to score.
Wait, hold on. Did you just say you always liked penalty kicks?
I do. You know, I always felt more pressure if there's something I'm supposed to do versus something that no one expects me to do. And with a penalty kick, no one thinks the goalie's going to save it. But now, I mean, you can do so much research on shooters in scouting report that you know where that guy usually wants to go. And then there's a lot of cues you pick up on. So if you like detective mode, penalty kicks are great if you're a goalkeeper because you watch their approach, you watch their eyes. Some forwards will try to throw you off with their eyes, or with their body movement. And usually there's like a decoy before they go the direction they're going to go. So don't take that first bite, that first bait where they look one way because they want you to shift that way, or they lean their weight one way. And I found so frequently they're actually going the other way. So it was fun to kind of get in their heads. And you see goalies, you know, flapping their arms, jumping around, you know, moving, playing games. People are talking to the shooter. I mean, that's such an intense moment. The game's decided. There's defining moments in sports, in life, you know, moments you don't forget. And Gareth Bale was clutch. You know, that's a guy that he's one of those players, you know, MLS, they just won the title and he scored the goal. They were down a man, scored a goal at the end of the overtime so that they won a shootout. I mean, this guy's whole career, you kind of go, where is he during the game? And then he just, when he shows up and he wins the game. And that's Gareth Bale. Today he tied the game. And you need clutch players. And there's just something that separates the great ones that when everything's on the line, that's they're at their best. And for Matt Turner, he guessed correctly. He did his homework. He read the situation. And he just didn't, his fingertips weren't strong enough. But, you know, as soon as he dove, he put his hands in his, he put his face in his hands because he knew he could have had that one. And it was kind of a microcosm of the game. It was like, it was right there. You were right there. You had it. You were tracking. And you, oh, it went through your hands. But no one expects him to save it. Would have been an unbelievable save. And yet, I think if you asked him, he would say, yeah, I could have had that one. And great moment for Wales. Tough one to swallow for the U.S.
I was really impressed with the number of USA chants, really impressed with the drum, the red, white, and blue. And obviously Wales, Welsh fans were also dressed in red. But what did you think of the atmosphere, this World Cup stage in the Middle East in Qatar?
The 12th man, they play a role. And when you hear that USA chant, I mean, you just get those goosebumps.
Oh,
and you can
chills.
Hear it loud.
Yes.
And it just picks you up. You're having a tough day. You're not feeling motivated. Or, you know, the ref didn't make some calls. Let's just say that happens hypothetically. You hear that chant and it's like, it just fires you up. You feel the support of the nation. And you need that as a player because there's moments where you're starting to dip a little bit. In the second half, we were dipping and our fans just kept picking us up. And it's electric there. And there is a lot of pride to play for your country. You know, when you play for your club, that's at a very high level. But there's no greater honor for a player than to play for your country. And when you get to represent your country and you put on that red, white, and blue, I mean, this is a childhood dream come true. There's a powerful moment where the coach, and he calls the players and he congratulates them because they made the team. And you see the reactions. And for all of us, like, we have dreams, we have childhood dreams. And when you dream something and then it happens, it's surreal. And like, you get to play for America on the biggest stage. And so, you know, when you see that atmosphere, if you're not familiar with soccer, there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of singing. There's a lot of dancing. And what's interesting in Qatar, you know, you can't drink. And people are like, whoa, you can't drink at the game. Like, are they still going to be into it? Are they still going to have fun? And their passion levels couldn't be any higher. And because it's not about the drinking, it's about the game and the love of the game. And soccer culture just carries with it. Again, a lot of celebration, a lot of singing, a lot of fan involvement. If you go to the games, like especially in Europe at some of the MLS games, like you're going to feel like, oh, we're standing up. Oh, we're into this. Oh, we're singing. And also I appreciate the intelligence because you can tell how a crowd reacts, how well they know the game.
Right.
And in soccer, you know, they say 80% is the movement off the ball. And so there's so many details and strategy and skill and intricacies and intelligent runs. And when a crowd understands soccer, they're clapping for it. They're appreciating all those little elements. And it's a game that maybe it grows on you and it takes a little time for you to say, okay, I'm into it now. I'm into it. But when you're actually in the stadium, you can't miss it because it's palpable.
Jesse Bradley played on the international stage in places like Zimbabwe, in Scotland as a goalkeeper at the pro level. And he's with us now from Seattle After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What are the perception of American players elsewhere? Because in the United States, soccer's not our number one sport.
Yes, we don't have the tradition and the legacy. What's been interesting over the last 30 years, it really started with goalkeepers playing at the highest level. And Americans tend to play a lot of sports, great hand-eye coordination, you know, good size, athleticism. And that feeds to, you know, or leads to really developing awesome goalkeepers. Brad Friedel was one who played in the English Premier League, which is considered, you know, one of the very best leagues in the world. And he played there for many years. And goalkeepers have been respected. But in terms of the field players, we're now ascending to new levels. And you see it in terms of performance on the greatest clubs around the world. You see it that our younger players are being sought after by other countries. And there is really an increase in respect for American soccer at this point, which is exciting right now. There's never been more potential. And the quality of play in a young age, the quality of coaching that we're seeing in America now, it's unprecedented. So it's ascending. If you were buying stock, you buy stock in a soccer in America right now. But yet we're still earning some respect. And this is an interesting spot right now, I think, in the history of soccer in America, because it's kind of a crossroads, and it even ties into the coaching, it ties into the World Cup. When you are not as strong as the other team, you're going to focus on defense, you're going to retreat more, you're going to build up a solid foundation and shell, and you're going to keep the goal out of the back of the net, and you're going to play low-scoring games. Now, that's what we've done in a lot of World Cups. But now we're kind of in that moment of, do we go for it? Do we get aggressive? Do we get creative? Do we do a lot of attacking soccer? Which, if you can't sustain it, it leaves you very vulnerable in the back. And I think, like, when the team was getting ready for the World Cup, we played Japan and we got beat. And I think we showed up thinking, yeah, we're just going to dominate attacking soccer. It's going to be amazing. And then we realized, oh, actually, that didn't work. Japan scored on us. They beat us in that friendly, that warm up for the World Cup. And so I could see almost like a double take. So should the coach, you know, go hard? And with Wales, you saw them in the first half, they retreated more. And then yes, the second half, they were more aggressive and direct. And it's a coaching strategy. It's a philosophy. But you're going to see against England, we're going to just naturally retreat a little more. And when you have the quality and skillful players, you can maintain possession, you can move more people forward, and when you go against the best teams, you don't have to go in any type of defensive shell. And right now, we're really, you know, getting more potential than ever before to attack more attractive soccer. It's called the beautiful game.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I sure hope we get out of this group stage and then get to compete in those single elimination rounds. And I think we can go toe-to-toe with some of the best teams. And I'd love to see, you know, the team rise up and play at that level. Because even when we advanced in 2002 to the round of eight, Coach Arenas at that time, he just knew, and he had it down. I mean, he had a system down, and he had players down, that it was going to be strong defensively.
Yes.
And then we'll pick our counterattacks. We'll pick our moments. But I think we have a team now that if they gel, that they could display the quality that we have now with American soccer.
Also, the fitness, having the fitness to be able to outlast opponents. And that kind of brings me to another question, Jesse. We saw a bunch of players go down, seemingly cramps and having trouble toward the end of the game. How tough and physical a game like this one between the U.S. and Wales?
That's right. And that, again, brings up the fact, should the subs come in sooner? But I'll tell you, there's also some gamesmanship. The part I like least about soccer is the drama, the flopping.
The flopping!
You know, and there's so much rhythm in soccer, right? It's not one that you stop the play, you stop the play, you huddle, you stop the play, you huddle, another timeout. No, it's got flow and rhythm. And you build that up. And when one team has rhythm and they're starting to take over the game, the other team might, you know, you get a small cramp and it looks like a big cramp. You know, your hamstring's a little tight and you're rolling on the ground like you need a stretcher. And part of that is the strategy and the gamesmanship. It's not sportsmanship, but you twist it a little bit because there's gray in every sport and you take advantage of a little bit. And yes, when a player goes down, the game stops for 3 minutes. You know, they bring out something, the medic comes out, and there's just some acting in soccer. And I'm going to own it and also say that, you know, there are some legitimate cramps too. Qatar, the reason they're playing this in the winter, you know, in the summer, it's 108 degrees average.
No.
In the summer. So we had
No.
to play in the winter. We never play in the winter. It's still 80 degrees. Some of their stadiums have better air conditioning than others. So the fatigue is real and you can't simulate a match. I mean, when you're playing with that adrenaline, the first 30 minutes, like, you're going to wear out. But, you know, having said that, it's physical, it's mental. The U.S., if we can just keep making, this is true in life, it's true in sports, it's the decision making. And so, yes, you need the fitness. Yes, you need the physicality. But then it's the mental toughness and it's the mental sharpness to make the right and quick decisions when you're exhausted. And that's what we saw play out at the end of the game. And yeah, we needed some subs. They now allow 5 subs instead of 3. So that's positive, and it gives the coach more options too.
So much great reaction and analysis with you, Jesse. Thank you so much for offering your expertise as well as your passion. Got to have you hang on. We need to take a quick break, but I want to bring you back for a couple more minutes just to ask you about the favorites, some of the other big dogs on this World Cup stage. So hang with us. Jesse Bradley from Seattle helping us break down the first game of the World Cup for Team USA in 8 years. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Musa, Sargent, Pulisic on the run. Pulisic has Weah. Pulisic rolls it in. Tim Weah!
I saw the ball come to Christian, and as we trained in practice, once he gets the ball, make those runs in behind. Time I run well, Christian gave a beautiful ball, and it was up to me to finish it.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
And finish it, Timothy Weah did, though of course a little disappointment by the time it was all said and done. He is responsible for the first U.S. goal in World Cup play in 8 years. And you hear the call from late first half against Wales with John Strong on Fox Sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're spending a couple more minutes here with Jesse Bradley, former pro soccer goalie in nations like Zimbabwe and Scotland. A lot of experience here in the United States as well. Just want to ask you about the teams and the nations that are expected to advance, those who are coming into this World Cup as front runners, Jesse. How much has that changed? How much has the balance of power changed over the course of the past 4 years?
The same great teams are still at the top, and Brazil is standout. France, of course, has incredible players. Mbappe, at that age, he's phenomenal. I think Argentina's hungry. You know, Messi, he hasn't really come through in a World Cup, and he's now 35, so I think he knows the clock's ticking. This might be his last. Ronaldo is 37. I know he's motivated. He's not having a great season at Man U, and so he wants to see Portugal go far. Germany is always great. Spain is so skillful. Different countries have different styles. You can appreciate that. Germans, very direct, very technical. Brazilians have a lot of flair. Spain, they control the ball, short passes. And you get to kind of pick up on the personality of some of the teams. But, you know, those are the favorites right there. But there'll be probably 3 or 4 that surprise, and they're in the final 8. They made it somehow. And those Cinderellas, that's usually who I end up going for, because, you know, like Wales, they hadn't been in the World Cup since I think it had been like 1958 or something. Right. Canada's the first time in 36 years. You know, the African teams are phenomenal in one sense, and yet they typically don't advance as far. So I tend to pull for them. I played professional soccer in Zimbabwe, you know. So I like to go for the underdogs, but watching the teams at the top level, it's inspiring. And you see that, you know, if you go to a symphony and the dedication and the way that a whole symphony can work together, and you just know how many thousands of hours have gone into that. Like when you watch soccer at its highest level and the skills and the trap and the movement, it blows you away. And you appreciate it more if you know the sport, you played it, or you've tried to play it. They're playing at a level that is so far above like MLS. And MLS is, you know, we're grateful to have professional soccer, and it's improving, it's strong. But to watch this, it's like a different game almost. The greatest players are the ones that are motivated, that go far beyond what the coach asks for, far beyond the playing field. They're the ones that do the little things. They do consistently what other people do occasionally. And that's what it takes to perform at this level. But in most countries, it's number one, and there's nothing close. And the teams that are unselfish, it's we more than me, it always shows up in the games. That's what leads to championships.
Fired up. Although I do now remember all too well the stress and anxiety of watching Team USA play on this level, because it's seemingly always very tight. That's the nature of the game, but it's also the way that the Americans play the game. So we are just getting started. Big match against England coming up the day after Thanksgiving. You want to follow Jesse Bradley on Twitter at Jesse J. Bradley, former pro goalie on the international stage. age and lots of experience here in the United States as well, but also a pastor, speaker, an author, great follow on social. Jesse, it was awesome to just peel back a few layers, and we've only got one game under our belt. So thank you. We look forward to talking to you again as this World Cup unfolds.
Love your passion for soccer, Amy. You do an incredible job with After Hours. Thanks for just being so consistent. And also, if anyone wants to connect, talk soccer, talk life, reach out to me. Love to hear from people. And this is just the start of the tournament. So enjoy the next month. Find some other people. Invite them over to your house. Have a party. And let's go USA. We want to make it through past this first round. Make some noise in this tournament. Go deep and have a great run.
It's really cool to be able to hear someone who played the game on the international stage give us some analysis and reaction. Not all ties are created equal, and the disappointment, but the necessity and the mental toughness that's required now to move forward into a match against England that, on paper, is theoretically so much more challenging. By the way, producer Jay reminded me, our first conversation with Jesse Bradley is on our YouTube channel. And the reason we posted it is because it will inspire you. His story, both in soccer and after soccer, took a completely dramatic turn because of tragedy in his life. And the way that he has not only had to figure out what to do post professional sports, but the way that he inspires others, you will appreciate his story. So check it out on our YouTube channel, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Plus, we've got a brand new holiday video that we just recorded last week with an article of clothing that is unique to my wardrobe. There is a story behind that as well. Always with the stories. All right, still ahead on this edition of the show. Got a couple of big injuries and some quarterback news to share with you from the NFL. Also, speaking of injuries, a Heisman hopeful loss for this season. We didn't get to much college football on our Sunday night into Monday morning show because of the nature of the beast, which is the NFL. But we're on the eve of the next set of college football playoff rankings, so that news is significant. And Kyrie Irving over the weekend, reinstated by the Brooklyn Nets, played his first game with them on Sunday night, and he finally gave the Nets and the NBA what they were looking for in order to be reinstated. So there's a lot that we can still work into this edition of the show, but the U.S. is back on the World Cup stage. Did you watch the game? And also, in light of the first 11 weeks of a wonky NFL season, trust me Tuesday, which three teams do you have confidence in? If you had to pick three right now, trust me Tuesday, who are they in the NFL? On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Snap back to Prescott. He's got a lot of time. Deep down the right side. Oh, it's caught at the 45, 40, Pollard, 20, 10, Pollard, uncle, 68 to Tony Pollard on third and 15. Good night, nurse.
No, we just feel like, you know, as long as we can, you know, keep each other in and out, you know, fresh on the field, you know, just keeping the defensive guessing, you know, not knowing what to prepare for, you know, we feel like we had the advantage.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That's understating it. Tony Pollard, we feel like we have an advantage to the tune of 40-3. Pollard with two touchdowns through the air, Ezekiel Elliott with two touchdowns via the rushing attack, and the Cowboys overwhelm, embarrass, and humiliate the Minnesota Vikings. So for those of you who may have had an inkling to trust the Vikings before week 11, you're probably thinking again. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We are having a really tough time narrowing down our touchdown of the week candidates, our TD of the week candidates. It is going to be a TD Tuesday, a Thanksgiving touchdown Tuesday. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Me and my literary tools. But anyway, that one's probably not going to be in there with Brad Sham on Cowboys Radio, even though it was an unbelievable wrinkle to the Cowboys, and they were running roughshod over the Vikings in Minneapolis. We have multiple game winners. We may even have to eliminate a 103-yard kickoff return for a touchdown that was a record breaker. Jay, how do we do that? I feel as though we're going to be shortchanging at least one, if not two or three, incredible touchdowns. So we'll give you the candidates coming up next hour here on CBS Sports Radio. But the reason we come out with that Tony Pollard TD as the Cowboys were piling on against the Vikings is because the Vikings have a quick turnaround now. They host the late game on Thanksgiving night. So they're back at home at US Bank Stadium against the New England Patriots right now on a hot streak, three games. And their defense is stingy and stifling and smothering, as we saw in the elements against the Jets on Sunday. Justin Jefferson, frank and open about how the Vikings lost and why that was so much worse.
It just sucks that we lost this bad, you know? I mean, if we just lost by 3, 7, 10 points, you know, it wouldn't be as bad as before, you know? People lose games, you know? We're not expected to go undefeated for the rest of the season, you know? Things happen, you know, it's the NFL. You know, there's good teams that we're playing. It's just the fact that we lost by 37 points at home. So it's just embarrassing just being in that type of situation. And, I mean, we just didn't play good in all phases. So that's what really killed us and make us, you know, acting the way we're acting now. It's just that we just got to get this taste out of our mouth. We didn't play good at all. And we just want to get to Thursday, have a chance to, you know, get that taste out of our mouth and play better.
Justin Jefferson referring to the way the Vikings lost and how it made it so much worse that it was 40-3. And he does specifically note it happened at home. So, yes, the Vikings fall back to 8-2. But we're asking you on this edition of After Hours. We've labeled it a Trust Me Tuesday. Because Tuesday's so much better than Monday. Let's be honest. We're so close to Thanksgiving now that we just are labeling it a Tuesday, even though parts of the United States are not yet officially into Tuesday. We're jumping the gun, baby. Jumping the gun into
Happy
Tuesday.
Thanksgiving.
Trust me. Just trust me. Which three teams in the NFL do you trust the most right now? Which teams inspire the most faith? So we're asking you on Twitter, After Hours CBS, as well as on our Facebook page, and I'm intrigued by some of your answers. I love how some people refuse to give us three. They only give us their favorite team. That's fairly typical. Patty on Facebook, the Bucks, who have the bye this week, the Chiefs, who won on Sunday Night Football, and the Patriots defense. So not the Patriots offense, but the Patriots defense. I recall hearing Mac Jones on Sunday say the offense wasn't as bad as what you think. It wasn't as bad as what it looked like. Oh, my God.
Bless you. I don't think that's ever happened.
No, that one snuck up on me. Excuse me.
I really can't control that.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry. Generally, the sneezes take a second to build, and so I can turn off my mic, say, excuse me, turn off my mic, look at the light. It usually goes away. Man, that one caught me by surprise. Don't ask me why. Weirdly enough, my cat Sugar is having sneezing fits these days too. So I know she has allergies, but right now, I don't know if it's because she's cold. The house is cold. I don't turn the heat up much past 66 at any point. The cat is having sneezing fits. It's very annoying when I'm trying to sleep. She's very annoying when I'm trying to sleep. Anyway, back to Facebook. Patty says Bucks, Chiefs, and the Patriots defense. Scott says, I trust the Patriots will somehow back their way into a playoff spot. You can trust that if you want. Right now, I wouldn't trust that any of the teams in the AFC East are automatically going to be in the playoffs because that division is a bear. They're going to beat up on each other, which means there will be attrition. And as much as it is a possibility that four teams from any one division could make it into the playoffs, it's unlikely. There's still a long way to go in the AFC East. And if it comes down to tie breaks, well, the Jets, they're definitely looking up at the Patriots in that situation. Sandy says the 49ers. Scott goes with KC, Buffalo, Philadelphia, and hope is his strategy for the Cowboys. But he goes with KC, Buffalo, Philadelphia. Eric, Dallas, San Francisco, KC. He actually says both the Eagles and the Bills are suspect. Shane, Kansas City. That's it right now. Donnie, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Cowboys. And then Dane gives us tiers. Eagles and Chiefs are the top tier. Bills and Vikings, also top contenders. Dolphins, Ravens, Cowboys, Niners are big threats. Joe says KC and San Francisco to win. Michael, one team and one team only, the San Francisco 49ers, which gets a thumbs up from Sandy. So you know where the Niners fans are. And yes, they're riding high after seeing Jimmy Garoppolo throw four touchdown passes. George Kittle catch two of them. Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and the various weapons now. Since they added Christian McCaffrey, it's a completely different offense. Since they got healthy, a completely different offense. And we know they did it as a response to the Los Angeles Rams, who are still technically involved in the playoff race. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're going to do some QB news as we head through the second half of the show. And that is not just the NFL, but also a little bit of college. But we want to work in some other sports as well. And so don't you worry if you haven't heard us talk about your favorite sport yet. We just might. Like, how about this? The Boston Celtics, who started out like a house on fire and had the best record in the NBA for a couple of weeks, stubbed their toe against the Chicago Bulls.
Vucevic, left wing, DeRozan, one bounce, lets it fly, and a three. Got it! DeMar DeRozan for three. He came in shooting 22% beyond the arc. Nothing but net for DeRozan. Undersized Jaylen Brown. Vucevic in front. Three ball. Up. Got it. Oh, I'll tell you what, Bill. DeMar DeRozan with back-to-back jacks.
Said, you know what? I'm feeling good tonight. I got a rhythm going here. Give me the ball anywhere on the floor.
Brown crossing over three times. Double down the ball. The pass deflected away by the Bulls. Caruso was there. And here's DeRozan lined to the lane with the euro set by Grant Williams with a scoop of the score with the right hand.
Chuck Swirsky on the Bulls radio network as Chicago snaps the Celtics' nine-game win streak. And you could tell right away that the Celtics weren't in an offensive rhythm, and that's a credit to the Chicago defense.
Obviously, they're a hard team to guard. It's hard to, you know, just expect one guy to stop one of their guys. You know, there needs to be a lot of help. But, I thought we were really active. I thought we covered for each other. I thought we really tried to help one another throughout the course of the game.
Just didn't have a great start, kind of playing from behind the whole night. And, you know, it was just a lot of little things, some turnovers. Felt like I had some good looks, missed some shots, but, you know, just kind of a slow start for whatever reason. And, you know, we should have known a little bit better that, you know, they haven't felt great of recently. And they was, you know, not desperate, but, you know, they came out and played like they really want to win.
Yeah, the Chicago Bulls have not had the best start coming out of the gate. There are a lot of attention on the Bulls for the moves they made. And as you hear Jason Tatum say, they may not have the results to prove it, but they definitely are a powerful team and have a stingy defense. Tatum, 28 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, so just shy of a triple-double. And their win streak is over, but did someone say win streak? Oh my goodness. I was at a Devils Avalanche game not that long ago. I didn't see this coming.
First power play of the night for the Devils. In the slot, shoot, scores! Jesper Bratt on the power play, and the Devils lead 1-0. Hughes across the blue line, back to Bratt. Bratt back to Severson, shoot, scores! The Devils are up 3-1. Isher starts the rush down the ice. Tatar blockered away by Skinner on front. Tatar follow up. Score! The clock ticking down here. The crowd is in a fervor. The New Jersey Devils have tied a franchise record. 13 straight victories. 5-2 Devils.
Don't want to jinx it, but we're finding a lot of different ways to win from a lot of different personnel. And I think the important part is that it really has been about the team. And at any given time, somebody has come up big for us, scored big goals, big saves, and special teams has played a big part of that.
I guess we're up there with the history book. Nobody's going to take that from us now, so it definitely feels good. And proves that that we're a good team. It's definitely just fun, enjoy it. Like we said, just keep riding the wave, and we're playing some good hockey, and yeah, hopefully just the wins keep going.
Captain Nico Hischier, 3 assists in the game for the Devils as they tie the franchise record, 13 wins in a row. Lindy Ruff, the head coach before that. They last won 13 straight in 2001, 21 years ago. And it was early in 2001, so actually 21 and a half years ago. And we don't want to touch the money, but that team would go on to play for the Stanley Cup. Devils are sitting on top of the Met division, and this is a team that is seeing a total turnaround. They finished 28th in the NHL in points last season. They had a lot of good young talent, courtesy of some very high draft picks over recent years. But I have had the chance to see them now in back-to-back seasons beat the Colorado Avalanche, and that was part of the early stages of this 13-game win streak. So one of the PR guys who works with the Devils, Kyle, he likes the show. So hi, Kyle. He says I'm their good luck charm. I don't know about that, but I'm going to have to get back to Newark again soon. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.